So if you could see me right now, I've got a bit of a bump on my head, just above my right eyebrow. A little cut. Kathleen, is it looking all right? What do you think?
Yeah, I think little bump doesn't do it justice, actually.
Oh, really?
It's quite a large bump.
It looks bad.
Yeah, and you've got quite a dark scab there, so it's obviously cut quite deep.
And I've got a little pinprick on my finger that just keeps bleeding. And there's a reason for this, because I've been training with a new guide dog. So we dispatched the old guide dog. Oh, that sounds bad, doesn't it?
Yeah. You didn't dispatch him, you still actually have him.
He's at home now, being a pet dog and enjoying every single minute of it. And I've got a new guide dog, and so I've been training throughout April. And I don't know, what am I going to talk about today? I think I want to talk about the fact that getting a guide dog isn't all magical, as the TV sometimes portrays. It's actually quite hard. And the bump I was talking about was a little bit of a teething trouble that me and the new dog Ulrich had.
Ulrich.
They've got great names. When he smashed me into a concrete pillar. Now, I don't entirely blame him. I'm sure I'm partly to blame for this, because it is a partnership. And the prick on the end of my finger is to do with the blood prick test that I had to have on Wednesday morning at the hospital when I went for a brain scan to see that I hadn't had too much concussion, because I'm on certain drugs that thin the blood. Anyway, this is Inside Ouch. Thank you for listening. Around the table, we've got a lot of people today. Kathleen Hawkins.
Hello.
Lee Kumutat.
Hello.
Fellow guide dog owner.
Hello.
Beth Rose.
Hello.
Good surname.
Thank you.
I'm Damon Rose, and in Edinburgh is Emma Tracy.
Hello.
Also a guide dog owner. Lee and Emma, you've had your dogs for quite a while, haven't you?
I'm on number three.
Do you even remember what it's like to train with a dog and the difficulties and the hardship and the tears and the laughter and the joy?
I
and
do.
The stop me, someone.
And the time. Yeah. I didn't realise it took so much time.
I'm only on my first guide dog, so I can 7 years in, I can still remember very clearly the 4 weeks of emotional turmoil that took place. I didn't even like dogs. I had no interest in dogs, but I wanted to be able to walk down the street nice and quickly with my head held high, which I wasn't able to do with a white cane. Some people can, but I struggled to do that. So I got a dog sort of just out of necessity rather than out of cuteness, cuddliness, love. So actually it was a massive, massive thing for me to have a dog in my house, to trust a dog, all that kind of stuff. And then the whole idea of creating the partnership and the dog not walking you into stuff or into the road is quite a big thing to get over. And yeah, it's really emotional.
I always said I would never get a guide dog. Always said there was absolutely no way that I was going to be dependent on a four-legged animal, even though I'm an animal lover. Absolutely wasn't going to have it. And then when I was at university and doing a long commute to university, and it was one of those universities that's like a city rather than a compact university, and I really struggled to get around using a cane. And I just got talking to people and I thought, oh, well, maybe it's worth giving it a try. And I haven't looked back. I love having a guide dog. Absolutely love it.
There is a lovely thing. As part of the whole process of getting a guide dog, you have to really bond with your dog, don't you?
Yeah.
And that's part of it, sort of getting your dog to fall in love with you.
Yep.
A little bit. And to stop loving the trainer who he or she has been with for a little while. You've got to sort of transfer the love over so that the dog wants to work with you. And so that can be quite nice, but it can also be a little bit...
It's hard work. They reject you.
Yeah.
My Josh, who I have at the moment, growled on me the first night I had him.
Yeah.
He growled at me because I tried to hug him. Oh. And he went, actually, lady, I haven't got a clue who you are or where I am. Back off. Grrr.
Mm.
And it was horrifying because you do think that they're just these cuddly things that are happy no matter what. And he wasn't.
Yeah.
So it does take some doing. He lets me hug him now. Yeah. Only since last week or so.
My second dog was really in love with his trainer. He never really loved me.
Aww.
And I don't think, yeah, he never really worked as, you know, as well as the other dogs. Because some are better than others.
Well, that's the only reason they do it, isn't it? I mean, there is no other reason for these dogs to do what they do, which is, you know, guide us and take us around obstacles and find doorways and doors to shops and stop when traffic's coming and those sorts of things. Only reason they do it is because you make them feel good about themselves for doing it.
And is that through the relationship or treats as well? Is it rehearsal and learned behaviour?
Well, treats have, I don't know how you feel about this, Damon, but treats have come in quite a lot later. When I first trained with my guide dog, first dog in 1995, there was never a question that you would reward a dog with a treat.
Mm.
Whereas it's much, the, you know, thinking has changed over that time. And so Damon was saying this morning that he smells of dog food because he has to bring dog food in his pocket all the time.
And this morning, obviously, in the newsroom, we had the treat of the high-pitched whistle that Damon was using to get Ulrich to have his breakfast.
Yeah, and this is new for today because Ulrich has decided he doesn't really like coming into work. So he shies at the building. Kathleen, you saw him yesterday walk right past the door.
Yeah, I was behind Damon
walking
straight
onto Hallam Street.
And then just veered right when he got to the door. I wasn't sure if it was something that was supposed to happen.
Yeah, so one of the solutions that I was discussing with my guide dog trainer yesterday, that's Isabel, who is fantastic, was to bring his breakfast into work. So start doing that every morning and the dog is going to want to come in the building. Yeah. So it's all psychology. And this is one of the things, yeah, as a guide dog owner, it's not just about having a dog lead you. A lot of guide dog owners think of themselves really as the driver of the dog. But also you have to get into the dog psychology. You have to get into the dog's head to make it work for you.
Are you saying that Ulrich intentionally walked you into a post because you weren't giving him enough treats?
No, I'm saying there were an awful lot of people around that lunchtime, Tuesday lunchtime. And it's entirely possible. It's a partnership. You know, you and the dog work in tandem. And I think I wasn't perhaps doing quite as much in the way of signalling to him and getting him to steady.
So he was going too quick.
Yeah, I wasn't doing the steady hand signal that I should have been doing, really, in a big group of people.
Because the thing is, every dog is different and you have to react to them differently. And even walking along with the dog, you have to act differently every dog. And when you've had a dog for quite a long time, let's be honest, you build up quite a few bad habits. Myself and Verona have millions of bad habits and we don't do a lot of the things that we were trained to do initially. Sorry, guide dogs, but we still work really well and she's brilliant. But, you know, you get relaxed about it and you forget your hand signals or you start thinking about what you're going to have for breakfast or you start thinking about what article you're going to write when you get into work and then you end up walking into a pillar because you've forgotten to give the dog the instructions they need.
See, yeah. I really value that, being able to switch off and just tune out and leave it to the dog, you know, when it's a familiar route and it's an older dog and you've got experience.
It's wonderful.
And it's wonderful because you know, all these things. And I've had a friend staying with me this week and we've been walking around at my local area and she's sort of just in conversation being sort of saying, oh, there's a something there and there's a something there and a sandwich board there and there's a post there and he's going to try and get you around that. And they are things that I am completely unaware of, that I don't need to be aware of. And so for me, I love that kind of being able to switch off and think about other things and not have to think about my mobility.
And what happened when he did collide with the post? Did people come rushing over to you? Or?
Actually, this is interesting because immediately no one paid any attention. I was standing there. I was quite rocked. I thought I was going to fall over or something. But I carried on down the road and I was occasionally putting my hand up to my eyebrow area. And I suddenly realised there was some liquid there. I'm thinking, is that sweat?
That really
is hurts. That, is that sweat? But it was blood coming down. My first thought was, oh no, I'm wearing a new shirt today.
Was it white?
It was a white shirt.
Oh. You didn't get any blood on it, though, did you?
No, I didn't
get any
blood.
Well.
Thank you. No, I sort of bent over. By the time I got to the church, a couple of people had gathered around me and they were saying, you're bleeding, are you okay? Do you want some help? And I said to a woman, I said, I'm not feeling great, actually. You haven't got a tissue or something, have you? She said, no, I don't. And then she reached forward and she put her hand over my wound and she caught the blood in her hands sort of for me. And I thought, I wouldn't do that for somebody else. So people can be lovely.
I mean, that is the other thing, isn't it, about guide dog training. Damon, we've all been, you know, kind of observing and watching you go through this process and not enjoying it. Not necessarily.
Why are you not enjoying watching me?
Well, you know,
having my cute guide dog training.
It's been quite stressful, hasn't it? Because prior to the colliding with a pole, there was also another incident.
Yeah,
there was.
So fitting a new animal into a family situation with two other dogs and two small children and a young dog isn't that easy.
Yeah, Ulrich, I came into the office a couple of Thursdays ago and he was being sick, wasn't he, constantly, just all over the place. And I went home early and it wasn't until about 11 o'clock that night I decided I really had to call the vet. I took him in, they kept him overnight and did another scan and they decided that he had probably swallowed something. He had major stomach surgery that morning. And they discovered that it was a finger puppet, an elephant finger puppet from my daughter. My daughter, incidentally, is still upset that she hasn't got the elephant back.
She doesn't want that back.
She does. That was her first thought. She's only four.
That's so cute.
And he's been convalescing for a few weeks. And the bump on the head from earlier this week happened on day one, the day he came back to work after this, so it's hardly surprising. We haven't been working. We'd only been working, training together for, 3 weeks? Then he was off for 2 weeks. But these are the things, aren't there? There's so many different things that could happen to a dog keeping a dog. I always think of guide dog training and having a guide dog. It's all about rehab, really. But it's very different to the kind of rehab you had, Kathleen, for instance, when you learnt to walk again after losing your legs. Because you didn't have to think into how a dog...
Yeah, well, guide dogs are essentially something that I've kind of realised watching this process is they are just mobility aids, but they are living mobility aids. So I had the, I guess, privilege of just relying on prosthetic legs and they don't think or feel for themselves. I am ultimately in control of what they do.
But did you still have the kind of highs and lows of that process of having to relearn that? You know, did you get frustrated they didn't work like you know, expected them to?
Yeah. And the intricacies of having to put them on every day, it is trying. I think as well, when you're an amputee and you're learning to walk again, there's a psychological element of not recognising your body that plays a big part in your rehab. So the act of putting on legs feels very unnatural and foreign when you're learning to walk again for the first time. So you just don't recognise them. I guess maybe similarly to having a new dog, you don't recognise how he operates. He's not Beckett, your old dog, who you had built up this fantastic relationship with and who worked incredibly well and probably dictated in some way your pace of gait and the way that you could manoeuvre around the world. And Ulrich hasn't yet picked up on that. But it comes much more from,
and then individual. You know, and then when you think you've got it all sewn up, they'll throw it at you, and they know that you think that you've got it all sewn up, and they start doing things like challenging behaviours, and you've got all that to look forward to, Damon.
And how do they do that? What kind of things do you mean?
Well, they decide that they're a bit tired of you being boss all the time.
Because you had an incident when your dog was 5 years old, after you'd had the dog for quite some while, and thought you knew him.
Thought I knew him like the back of my hand, and I was on a train. And the train doors opened and he spotted a dog on the platform and he just took off. I didn't have his lead securely enough, let's just say. And he just took off the train, left me for dead. See you later. Thanks for coming.
Oh my God. Not interested anymore.
No. I mean, honestly, people think guide dogs are robots and I think we've just absolutely exploded that myth, you know. I didn't get a guide dog till I was 27 and I'm blind since birth. So I didn't want the hassle. I had awful mobility. I didn't get around very well. I used a lot of taxis and a lot of arms, but I just could put my cane in my bag and do what I wanted. And the dog spelled responsibility to me. And I was right. But it was still, you know, one of the best things I've ever done. But, you know, I held off for a very long time so that I could just be an individual because... Throwing one more element into the pot here, people often talk to your dog instead of you, and that's quite a difficult thing as well. Whereas when you've got your cane, it is just you. It's just you. Whereas when you have your dog, you know, you want to have a conversation about something really important, like your health or work or something like that, and all people can think about is how cute your dog looks. And that I struggled with that a lot. I struggled with that a lot at the start. I've got strategies now to bring it back to being all about me.
Oh, it doesn't help having such an unbelievably cute dog as well, Emma.
But I recognise that point, the same questions all the time, isn't it? When I was at university and I got my first guide dog, I had a T-shirt printed that said on it, "His name's Anton, he's 2 years old." And I had people coming up to me and saying, "Oh, that's so funny, I get it. People ask you those questions all the time." How long does it take to train them?
You needed a bigger T-shirt, don't you?
Oh, man. He can smell my dog. Yes, he can smell your dog. I understand that you've also had a black Labrador and that it died. I'm sorry to hear that.
The amount of people that come up and tell you their dog has just died. You have to be a counsellor as well, don't you, as a guide dog owner?
You need a huge banner.
And then there's this other funny thing. You know, I think we've all got Labrador Retriever, quite cute dogs, but I had a friend who had a German Shepherd guide dog who I used to go down the pub with, and we used to get distinctly different people approaching us for a chat. So people come up to me and my cuddly Labrador, and they'd say, you know, usually young women, which wasn't appalling, I have to say, at the time. They would say, "Oh, that's lovely. I've got a dog at home. He's called Max or Ben." And people would come up to my mate Steve and go, "Oh, love your dog. I've got one at home called Hussein." You know, and it was, entirely different group of people.
Can I tell you my favourite guide dog anecdote? When you go training, you often train in classes and they take you away from your environment to a hotel or a... It used to be residential, didn't it? More residential schools, but now they take you to hotels. And so you're with a group of people. So you're kind of all going through it together. And that can be a good thing. That can sometimes be a bit tricky. But my favourite story is the people that got their new guide dogs mixed up when they were down the pub.
Oh, no.
and didn't realise until the next morning when the instructor joined them and said, "Hang on, aren't you supposed to have a black one? And aren't you supposed to have a blonde one?" Yeah. And they hadn't realised. That's my favourite.
That's so blind.
It is, really.
That's too blind.
It is. You'd hope you'd know. But that's why I think the point that I'm trying to make is that it's so new and it's so different with each one that it is easy to kind of make that mistake, I guess. Mm. I think that's the other thing, is the whole matching process is quite interesting.
I'm actually starting that now because we're looking into possibly retiring my Verona in 6 months to a year, because the waiting list is quite long. But also I need a particular type of dog, and one of the interesting things that I need a dog to do is walk at what they call dual pace. So one speed when I'm on my own and another speed when I'm with my small boy. So the dog has to be able to recognise which one is appropriate and walk at that speed, and that's not that easy for a dog, to be fair.
God, that's really interesting.
I've got a London dog, which means he's particularly hardy. You know, he can suffer the problems of and the noise and the hustle of the streets and the tube and that kind of thing. But he can also lie down at the other end of the scale, lie down in an office and be sociable and quiet. You don't often get those two skill sets together, do you? So that's why they match you, don't they, with the dog. You go through this matching process.
London dogs retire earlier than dogs in the rest of the UK. London dogs tend to retire at the 9-ish, 9.5 mark, whereas in Scotland, where I live, some of them don't retire till they're 10.5, because it's a slower pace of life.
And on the matching thing as well, if a dog doesn't like you, then you are pretty scuppered. I met somebody the other day who has a dog the same age as my Josh, and she said to me, "How old is he?" And I said, "He's 7. And she said, "Oh, I tried Josh out." And I went, "Really?" And she said, "Yep." She said, "He walked into the middle of the road and he stopped and he wouldn't move forward and he wouldn't do anything." And the instructor was beside himself saying, "He's taken the mick. He can do it. He's taken the mick." So clearly, you know, the dog just decided that it wasn't for him.
Ah.
Yeah. So I feel quite privileged to have my dog who decided I was probably best of a bad lot.
What happens in the matching process? Do you just write down kind of your needs, your lifestyle, and then...
It's a bit...
Speed dating.
Yeah.
It's like Match.com.
It's actually a proper process, isn't it? They spend hours with you
talking
to you about what your lifestyle's like and how... And they may even bring you out a dog to see how you walk and make sure that... Look what your pace is. Sometimes they bring out a harness and you have to hang on to one end of it and there's a instructor hanging on to the other end of it and you walk along and they turn quickly or slowly and try and look at to see how you move so they can get an idea of what kind of dog would suit you.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to doing that with all my new neighbours looking out their windows.
Exactly. You look a bit weird.
I do, and they act like dogs as well, don't they? And they sort of bound forward sometimes. It's all really embarrassing.
It's all a bit embarrassing.
But we should just say that we're talking about some of the points that perhaps people don't know about, the difficulties, the psychology, the dog handling aspect of it all. But the benefits of having a dog, obviously, are massive, and that's why we have them.
However, it is worth saying that it's not for everyone.
No.
And that there are lots of people who very happily get around with white canes.
Yeah.
And have excellent skills and, you know, and would not think about getting a dog at all. And I expect that they get really sick of being asked, why don't you want a guide dog?
Mm.
You know, I imagine that would get really, really wearing.
Thank you for listening. This has been Inside Out. Thank you, Kathleen, Lee, Beth, Emma.
Can I just say, I got my dog back, the one that ran off the train.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah.
Before the train had left the
station. Before the train left the station.
That's good. Always good to complete a story. you can tweet us at @BBCOuch. Email ouch@bbc.co.uk if you've got any personal stories you'd like to share with us. Until next Friday, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye. Bye.